What's up, everybody? It is your girl Keisha from Put Your Phone Down Podcast. Happy Friday, everybody. I just continue to get blessed by some fantastic people. I go by the motto, the right people will find you. And this guest that I have on the line, I've never met him physically, but he was led to my page and he contacted me. And when I tell you, this man has an awesome story. He is a best-selling author. You can find his work on Amazon, and his story is phenomenal. One of the things that I was reading is a quote that he does have, and it says that he lives by this. Life may be hard at times, but it's fair. And this is what I want to start out with. He has a book out, and ladies and gentlemen, I need you to snag it up. Five Times a Slave, and he's going to get into how he came up with that name and who he is. So I've given you your flowers, and I'm going to have to give them your name. Ladies and gentlemen, tune in. I have Arthur, the best-selling Arthur, Maurice Ford, on my line. Good evening, Mr. Maurice.
Thank you. Thank you. Good evening. Thanks for having me. And
You're welcome.
thank you. Thank you. And a little bit about myself. My name is Maurice Ford. I'm originally from Little Rock, Arkansas, but I live now in Los Angeles, California. And I'm the author of the book, Five Times a Slave, subtitle, How Childhood Trauma Can Create a Career Criminal. And the message in my book is based on my life. And I'm all about crime prevention and drug prevention. And the book's name, Five Times a Slave, I called it Five Times a Slave because I kind of borrowed from the, well, I did borrow from the 13th Amendment that abolished slavery, but it said except as punishment for a crime. And that's where I got the title from, Five Times a Slave, because I've been to prison in Arkansas, the ADC, five times from the age of 20 to the age of 37. And my last time I was in prison, I got out, I was 37, 2018. And I decided then to never go back to prison to change my life. And at the time, I really didn't know what that looked like. All I knew is that I wasn't gonna do none of the things that got me in prison. I didn't know what doing right looked like because I'd never done right all my life. But
Right.
one of the things that made me kind of, that confirmed it was a numerous of things, but one of the things that confirmed it was I remember being 20 years old, my first time in prison, Mexican security prison. And I remember how the guys in their 40s, 50s used to act like they young guys, loud, disrespectful. And I said to myself, I did not want to be those guys, one of those guys. But look at me, I was 37, the fifth time in prison, and that came to my mind. It was like a light went off. I'm like, man, I'm almost them guys that I said I wouldn't never want to be. So
Right.
I decided then to do whatever I need to do to stay free, and even if that meant staying away from people, places, things. And at that time, I was presented a opportunity through a reentry program to get my commercial driver's license, and that dawned on too, like, okay, this would be a perfect opportunity because that would keep me gone for a reason. It'll keep me state to state, out of my state. So everything kind of came together, and here I am now. And my thing is, as well, I preach a lot of trauma therapy to people, young adults, I say from the age of 13 to 25, who has been traumatized in some other way, form or fashion, that therapy. And I didn't take therapy when I was that young. I'm gonna tell you a little bit about the trauma that I experienced at age 13, though. I was 13. I got a brother, older brother and a younger brother. And I was raised in a two-parent home until the age of 13. So what traumatized me at that age was one night, my dad, he worked for Union Pacific, like for years, probably like 20 years at that time, like almost, what, 27 years ago now. I'm 42 now. But he went to work one night. So we thought, he went to work, but his job called about an hour later, and my mother answered the phone. They told her that he didn't arrive at work. So my mom trying to figure out like what's going on. And normally what he would do, sometimes he had a friend across the street, an older guy that stayed with his dad, or his dad stayed with him. So sometimes he might go over there, talk a little bit before we go to work. So she freaking, okay, he might have went over there and lost track of time. So she get me together. I'm 13 years old at the time. So I walk across the street with her. And when we went in the house was kind of dark. I seen the guy's father laying on the floor. And he was like an alcoholic. So I thought he was like 80 years old. So I figured at the time, having a 13-year-old mind, that he was drunk, because I used to see him fall out all the time, and I laughed, you know. So I laughed, you know, we kept going through the house. And when we got into the bedroom, my dad and the guy whose house it is, they was both murdered. You know, saying somebody shot them execution style. And that image in my head at the age of 13 kind of made me say, like, give up, like, say F it, you know what I'm saying? And I was already in the neighborhood, so, you know, I seen a lot of stuff going on, and I prayed to God that my dad would live, you know, because that's what my mother told me to do, and he didn't. So I kind of blame God. You know, you want somebody to blame. I blame God. I blame the, you know, the situation, and that led to a life of crime. Basically, you know, I was doing all kind of things, man. I should have accepted the therapy that his job provided, but at the time I didn't understand the therapy. It wouldn't, my mind frame then was like, it's not going to change the situation. But I know now that therapy isn't to change the situation, it's more of to talk you through the situation. You know what I'm saying? So I did like a lot of our people do these days. I self-medicated. I started dabbling in drugs until that became a problem, you know, and things of that sort. And hanging out. You know, my mother had, it was me and my two brothers, so, you know, she couldn't handle us boys like that. And for long, she kind of, you know, she left the neighborhood, put it like that, and we wanted to stay in the neighborhood. So that's where, like, my life of crime began in my neighborhood. I'm from a neighborhood in Little Rock called College Station, Arkansas, man. It's located directly, like, walking distance from the airport in Little Rock. And from there, my story goes from drug. My choice of drug was PCP, or what we call on the streets, Sherm. So, and it was like tradition in my neighborhood. It's kind of like a thing to do. I'd smoke Sherm before I even smoked marijuana in my neighborhood. It was like that with not only myself, but like a lot of people. But from there, it was just basically self-medicating. And all the things I used to do, with it was like fuel to the fire. And it was so easy to say effort to any situation, you know, and do the most. Based on this picture I seen, I couldn't get out of my head of my father murdered and his friends as well. But, you know, it hits different when it's your father that you see murdered. You know what I'm saying? It hits a lot different.
Yeah, and I want to extend my condolences for that. And I know in your bio, you know, if you don't mind, let's talk about your dad, Mr. Robert Ford. Now, you said up until 13, and I know in your bio, it looks like that he really did play a very instrumental part in your life. So what was your relationship like before, you know, before you saw that traumatic situation?
It was good, like a two-parent home. My dad worked at night. He was there all through the day, you know what I'm saying? So it was like, I never didn't see him. You know, you might, he worked all night, like I said, and we like basically sleep all night. So we'll see him the next day. On the weekends, he was off, you know, just like a regular two-parent home, you know, good. He taught me and my brothers the value of working with your hands, hard work. We always doing something around the house or in the yard. We had a nice house, nice size yard, cutting grass, you know, but we had all the things that a kid wanted, like moped, go-karts, basically spoiled, you know, so it was a great relationship. It was great.
And then it's like, have they ever solved that case, or was it just, did that go?
It went unsolved, you know what I'm saying? But you know how it is in the neighborhood. But you know, it went unsolved. Like, it went to court, and then they ended up dropping it. Lack of witness, you know what I'm saying? Something like that, I think I remember at the time. But, like, you know, it went unsolved, yeah.
And I can only imagine that fueled your pretty much your anger even more that it was no justice. And then, so you said after that, you just kind of, I guess, Mate, you just kind of like tapped out of life at
Tapped out.
13.
Yeah.
Yeah, at
Tapped out.
13 in that environment, I'm sure you felt grown anyway. So you talked
Right.
about getting into PCP and
Yeah.
then the criminal lifestyle. So I want to get into PCP for that for a small moment because that's amazing to me that, like you said, most people will start with the weed first and then it kind of increases.
Right. Right.
So this was a big thing where you were living at. And how did you even get in contact? Like you knew people, you knew who were you hanging around? Like how did that even happen for you to be like, I'm gonna get on PCP?
Yeah, it was like I said, my neighborhood's tradition. You seldom see anybody doing it, and like you know, I think the first time I can recall trying it, it was just a group of homeboys. You know what I'm saying? And I hit the joint. You know, it's never a problem when you first do it. You know what I'm saying? It was never a problem until like later on down years down the line. You know, but yeah, I tried it. It was cool. You know, I guess, you know, just went on about my business. But that's how I started. It was just like a normal thing to see people doing in my neighborhood.
So we on PCP at this point, and then you started kind of getting into the
Crime,
crime
yeah,
life. Yeah.
correct.
So do you remember your first crime and how you felt with that?
Yeah, my first crime. I talk about the first crime I was convicted of and went to prison for. I was 19, and I was like doing this. You know, I'm high drugging. Robbing, you know, and I had got into it with some guys on the side on my side of town, the east side of town, right? And it resulted in a shootout. So I'm paranoid. I'm getting high every day. I'm paranoid. I'm doing a lot too much. And what happened was, I got what we call a buildup. A buildup. It's when you smoke. You know, you smoking every day. You don't do too much of drinking fluids. You know, eating right. Drinking water, right? You just got to build up of this serum. So in those kind of cases, you can like have an out of body experience. You know, your body can be doing, but your mind not just checked out at the time. So at the time, I was with one of my homeboys, and we was riding around Little Rock smoking, getting high, and my mind told me that he wanted to kill me, right? And that's another thing that it'll do to you as well. So I advise children, young adults, to stay off of drugs. He didn't have no intention on killing me. It was just what my mind was telling me. And he had a gun in the car, which is how we ride around. You know what I'm saying? So I reached for the gun. We struggling over the gun. We on the street on the intersection stopping traffic. And the police happened to be a couple cars behind us, just, you know, trying to get by. But he see this car and he see these two men in the car struggling over something. So when he get out to see what we was doing, he see us a gun. He draw down on us. And my homeboy frees up with his hands up, but I get the gun, I jump out the car, and I start shooting. I had a shootout with the police. And so I was charged with 3 counts of criminal attempt to commit capital murder on the police at the age of 19. And I went to jail, you know, and when I got to jail, I didn't remember it though, but I ran my high down to the point where I thought that, at the time, be honest, I thought that I was shooting at green aliens. That's what my mind had me thinking, that the police was green aliens. So at the time, I'm thinking I'm doing the right thing. You know, so I'm saving the world or something. But reality, it was the detectives and the police I was shooting at. So when I get down to the police station, you know, they do the ballistic because I told them, like, I don't know what you, I didn't do it because I can't remember the incident at the time. They took the ballistic test off my hand, meaning like the gun residue. Test and they was like gun residue on my hand, so they formally charged me with a criminal attempt to commit capital murder times three on three police officers, and I was sent
Man, look,
to jail.
I'm gonna
For
protect you. You those probably was some little aliens that you saw.
I was tripping, man. I was tripping. For real.
Look,
It's all in the book, man. The story is fully in the book, so it's an interesting story.
yeah, 'cause I need people to snag this book just for that alone. And I mean, we can laugh about it
Every
now,
chapter.
right? But
Yeah, of course.
when you are in that mind frame, and let's just talk about it and keep it real. This is even for people who are not on PCP. You know, if you high enough, you can see certain things, you know, and so,
It could
you
be
know,
anything these days. Yeah,
right.
dreams, anything, you know what I'm saying?
All jokes aside, when you are in that zone, you creating your own reality, you know. But that high came down real quick once you got you in jail.
Yeah, I started running, and you know how that worked through your body, running it off, because I was running from them as well. They would chase me, and we would stop. We would shoot back and forth, and it's a blessing they didn't kill me, because they were shooting at me just like I was shooting at them, you know what I'm saying? So, and I go to jail, you know, and I'm stuck with, like, I had a high bun, and I don't remember it, though. So it's kind of like when I read the motion of discovery, and that's what the police write up. You know, it's an incident report. And I'm reading, I'm like, damn, okay. I'm looking at it, I'm believing it, though, because I'm like, they got a lot of stuff right. But as I'm sleeping and I'm waking up, and I'm like, you know how you kind of be not sleep, but you aware and you conscious, and the flashbacks come into my mind of that day and what I was doing. I'm like, man, I did do it. You know what I'm saying? And I'm familiar with the wig, and we call it wigging out in my neighborhood. I'm familiar with seeing homeboys wig out and do things that they don't remember, but it never had happened to me until that time. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'm guilty. You know what I'm saying? And I feel terrible because I never meant to. I didn't wake up that morning and say, I'm gonna go shoot at the police today. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of, right. I felt terrible. I was doing stuff in the streets, but to people, you know what I'm saying? But I was like, man, I thought my life was over at that time.
I mean, I can imagine it. So let's talk about the jail life, because, you know, I know that you mentioned it's been a few times back and forth, but right. Society and the media likes to glamorize that life.
Man, yeah.
What I want you to do is paint a picture, not only for the young audience that I hope is tuning in, but for the people that really do think that, you know, when these entertainers is talking about how they was in jail and what they did, can you just paint a picture of what it really looks like for us?
Well, I tell everybody this too, but I say this first, what you asked me, like, my first time, I thought the same thing. Like, you know, I see my homeboys go in and come out of prison, and I only knew what I seen on TV, you know what I'm saying? So I had, like, you know, the butterfly fly feeling in your stomach, you know, and all that third type stuff. But as I got in there, I seen a lot of people I knew, you know how they go. But it's a place where you can get killed too, though. You know what I'm saying? Either it's a different world. You can follow the rules, or if you don't follow the rules, you can be killed. You know what I'm saying? I just seen that happen to people. I just seen a lot of assaults, being beat with locks in the sock, you know what I'm saying? Things like that, getting stabbed. I seen a lot of stabbings, but it was all for a reason. And I learned quick, like, they give you a handbook when you get in prison of the do's and the don'ts, you know, what to do, what not to do. I never read it, because I basically just understood that, like, you know, how I live, I show respect and you get respect. You know what I'm saying? You don't steal, you don't gang bang, but so them people that do those things have a lot of problems in prison. So it can be a bad place for a person, and it can be a place that'll save you from yourself. You know what I'm saying? But, like, how they glamorize it, I wouldn't do that, because what I tell people is it's basically a waste of a good life, if anything. You know what I'm saying? Whatever the experience might be for you, it's a waste of a good life. And you don't never get that time back. And you can get, like, I done seen people get sick in there, you know, just catch the flu or something, and almost die. You know what I'm saying? Anything can happen to you. It's better for a person just to be free and to do the right thing and avoid all those things. I used to think of prison as a badge of honor, you know what I'm saying, for me, because I think everybody want to be something. And I proud of myself of being a convict. You know what I'm saying? I can know how to do time. But now when I sit back and look at it, I don't pride myself out that anymore. I just try to get an experience and tell people, like, prison prevention and drug prevention kind of speeches. But yeah, right. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of anything. It's a waste of your time. And like I tell young adults, try not to catch a felony. Try not to go to prison or jail at all, because you can do anything in life you want to do. But if you do that and you start doing it, what your life is going to be, you can still do things, but it's going to be hard, a lot harder. Some things I still get turned down for now in my life, you know what I'm saying, because of my criminal history.
Right, for something that you did at 19.
Yeah, I did at 19. And, like, you know, my last conviction was 2015, what, 5 years ago? you know, well, more than 5 years ago now, right? But it's still, you know, it's still come up, you know, it's still come up. So it could be something simple as life insurance, man. You know, once you grow up, you feel like, you know, hey, you need to be responsible. Even people giving life insurance, they don't want to take the risk. So, you know, you got to just think about what you're doing. And it's sad to say, a lot of times young people don't think about that. They got to experience it. But I'm here. My message is to try to teach you and show you that I'm an example, man. I can tell you what this road you live in is what's going to happen to you. You know what I'm saying? I can tell you how it messed up your life. It'll change your life to where you have to do things. You have to go even harder. You know what I'm saying? Where you can just go to school, get a degree or get a trade or create something, you know, with your mind instead, you know, and do good in life. Instead now, of going back towards prison.
I want to, because it looked like I told you this time was gonna go fast, right?
Yeah,
I want
you
to. What I want to do now is just because I had so many questions about family. I know you mentioned your bond was high, and a lot of family kind of turns on you or is not the same when you are in prison. But what I really want to get into is what inspired you or who inspired you to write this book, because this book is saving lives, I'm sure. So who and what inspired you to write Five Times a Slave?
Well, I have a friend I met in prison. He was sentenced to life as a juvenile. He did like 17 years, but he got out on that new law that came about where you can't sentence a juvenile to a life sentence. You got to give him a number, you know, so something they can do. So he ended up doing like 17 years, got out, he wrote a book. He was in that movie too, man. That movie with Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx it was based on a true story. He was a prisoner. And man, what was the name of that movie?
Tookie, I think. Is that it?
It was like in Mississippi. Michael, what's the dude's name? What's the guy named Michael Jordan? What's his name? Man, he was in it too. He played the lawyer. But he was in that movie as well because it was based on a true story. That organization that got him out made that movie. But
okay.
That was the first person that inspired me. And when I got out, I bought his book. You know, he got out about a couple years before me. I bought his book when I got out. I met my lady. She author. And it was kind of like confirmation. I would meet people that writing books. I got a couple cousins that wrote a book. And I was like, man, it's my time now. And I quit a lot of times because I was like, man, I don't want nobody to know this. You know what I'm saying? But something in me was saying, look, I need to put the book out there. It can help more people than it can hurt. You know what I'm saying? So I put the book out there in January, and it's been going ever since.
I like how you said that you thought about quitting, basically what it sounds to me, and you're free to correct me, but you were embarrassed, you know, to you did
that's
the crime,
exactly
but it's like, yeah, you know, you do the crime, but that's your secret. That's your dirt,
right,
you know. So
right.
To be transparent and put out this book, how did you feel when you start seeing people buy it and read it?
Yeah, because at first it was like I was writing it, and it's kind of like when I was writing it on the paper, I was like, man, this is stupid as hell. Why did I do this? I'm still asking myself, damn, that was stupid. I should have just done this. Why did I do this? So I'm like, man, I don't even want to put this out there like that. People gonna think I was stupid, just doing stupid things. You feel me? But when I put it out there, and the responses, you know, the feedback I got, I even got homeboys that were sending them to their sons in prison. So I was like, okay, I'm on the right path. Like being vulnerable, I guess you could say, you know, just putting it out there and saying, hey, this was my mess up, man. You know what I'm saying? This is what I did. And it makes no sense. No, I don't make no sense. But like this, what childhood trauma or trauma of any sort can do to a young adult, you know what I'm saying? When he's just angry, he do stuff that don't make sense. He gonna do stuff that don't make sense. And he gonna become a man who do things that don't make sense either. Cause by that time, it's embedded in your character. Things that you doing now, it's in your character. Like the last time I went to prison, 2015, I've been drug free for like 10 years at the time. But I still believe that I can carry guns. You know, so I still believe that I needed guns for my protection and I needed one in my house. So, you know, it wasn't the choices from the drugs. It was my mentality. You know what I'm saying? That I still feel like I needed a gun and I wasn't even in nothing. You know, I really didn't even need one, but it was just that old mentality. And I ended up going to prison for that gun, and that was the last time. So this time I got out, I said, I'm not doing not anything. You know what I'm saying? I'm just not gonna do nothing at all. I'd rather be a victim than back in prison for a gun, which, you know, I believe people should protect themselves. I believe I should too, but I can't. That's where that takes me back to telling young adults, stay out of prison, out of jail, so you can protect yourself if you feel you need to. Because if you do, then you're exempt from even protecting yourself when you change your life, you know. So
Right. Now, you mentioned the young youth, and I know that we are really, really close. We're at the 25-minute mark. And what I would like for you to do is to speak to our youth, young adults, and like you said, I love how you are trying to change by your book. You're changing lives, and you might not even know it. But what is it something that you would like? The listeners to take away with your book and with your life, what is it that you would like to let them know?
I like to let them know, man, that a life of crime is a waste of a great life. You know what I'm saying? There was a lot of times I could have been killed. A lot of times I could have got a life sentence. I could have got a letter instead of a number. You know what I'm saying? So, and a lot of people are getting letters these days. A lot of youth is getting like the long numbers, 40 years on, you got to do 28 years on that, you know. But I was fortunate. And what I like to tell them too is that I'm a person they can touch, talk to, and feel. You know, so I don't want anything from them. I just want to share experience with them, you know, and try to tell them how to maneuver through situations in the streets or in at home. You know, I'm big on therapy. If you need therapy, get them a professional to talk you through it, you know, or something like that. Because that's what I do. I do that now. You know what I'm saying? So I like for them to take that with them, man. And no, too, if you have messed up and you end up in prison, I'm really for prevention. Prevent kids from even going. But if you have messed up, it's always hope. Because my story is all about hope. You know, you can mess up five times. I've been in prison five times. So, you know, there's hope for you. You just got to go harder when you get out. And you got to go harder and you got to go smarter.
Yeah, I like that you said it's hope because a lot of people, whether they be young adults or, just older,
Yeah.
we are so hard on ourselves that sometimes we forget to show, pretty much tell ourselves and show ourselves grace and mercy and saying, okay, we can do it again. And this is what I think and I believe that this book is about. So where can we find you? I know you got the Instagrams and all those things. Where can we find this book and where can we find you? And can people book you to speak?
Of course, you can book me to speak. You can find me on my book on Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, and Goodreads as well. And you can reach me on Facebook as Maurice, capital E, capital L, Maurice L, or on Instagram, inbox me as well. And if you want to get directly to me, you can reach me by phone, 501-297-5515. And I would love to do that's my purpose with my book is to do public speaking to the youth, juveniles, schools, anywhere there's youth. That's where I want to be sharing my story.
Yeah, I think that you honestly, and I hope that you can take this in the best way. I think that you went through all of this to lead you to where you are now.
I
Even
believe so.
though it didn't feel good, it started with having your heart broken and crushed. And then it turned into a whole nother person that now you don't want to be. But
I
the
believe
thing
that.
is, we seeing it happen in this younger generation. So now you have the knowledge to, like you said, hey, look, if you once you identify it, you can be that light because a lot of these young men and women, they are brought up by social media and that stuff looks glamorous
Killing
to them, you
them. Yeah,
know?
it's killing them. They making decisions based off of just something on social media, and it's costing them their life.
Yeah. So we almost there. And I
Yeah,
want to
almost there.
know, the best-selling author, Mr. Maurice Ford,
Thank you, thank
Five
you, thank
Times
you.
a Slave.
Five times a
What I
slave.
want to know, who's your GOAT? I was gonna say your musical GOAT, but who's your GOAT in your life?
I can say I'm gonna give you musical and some a person. The person I would say is, well, I'll give you a couple. Marcus Garvey changed my life. Reading his book, Assata Shakur, The Revolution, changed my life as well. And for his rap go, man, you know, I'm Tupac. Tupac, anything. You could put Tupac's music in, and it's good.
See, you got some good taste, because the two Arthurs who you mentioned and Pac, like you said, you can't ever go wrong. So we are at our 30 mark, Mr. Maurice. Yeah. I've really enjoyed this, and I pray that it reaches the ears that it's supposed to be meant for. I hope that there are parents riding with their youngsters in the car, and their youngsters might be going in a different direction. You guys, you play this and you hear Mr. Maurice say, jail ain't where you want to be. I mean, once you get in there, you can't take it back. It's on your record. So let's just stay the straight and narrow. Stay out of there.
Yeah. It ain't nothing cool about prison or going to prison or doing time.
Nah. Yeah. There's nothing cool. So on that note, you guys, I want to thank you for tuning in. I want you all to support Mr. Maurice Ford. Go on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. He mentioned a few other places where you can contact him. If anybody wants a public speaker to come out and speak to the troubled youth, he is here for it, because this man turned his life around. Although we laughed at a few things, all jokes aside, y'all, you know, just be careful with the decisions that you make. In the meantime, I will be rocking with y'all guys on Wednesday. I'll have another special guest. But in the meantime, y'all, thank you for listening to Put Your Phone Down podcast. Like and share this episode with Mr. Maurice Ford, and have a good one, y'all.